This audio essay is meant to reintroduce the sort of operative inquiry that lies behind the six essays that I've contributed thus far to my website, Ghosts of Anti-Fascism Past, hosted at antifa.live.com. So behind the arguments, polemics, flights of fancy, concepts, and so on, there is a method to the madness, in other words. The pithy phrase, anti-fascism and socialist strategy. Anti-fascism, of course, presupposes that there is fascism. Yes. And that through that phrase, we can kind of subdivide it into three questions. What is fascism? What is anti-fascism? What is socialist strategy? And what do I mean by each? So, this general inquiry, which I've subdivided into three questions, I visualize as a three-wheeled stair climber. And if you look that up on the internet, go for images, then you'll see what I mean. So this contraption, this three-wheeled stair climber, is a representation of my method for approaching these three questions, for carrying out this general inquiry. One could approach the problem of fascism from any number of academic disciplines, as an historian, sociologist, political scientist, a psychologist, I guess. And I have read over the years many different, treatments of this issue throughout a variety of disciplines. I think, however, that what's most important to me is the theoretical framework that informs the theoretical framework that forms the groundwork, if you will, the infrastructure within any one of these disciplines. Another way of putting that is theory is important, and not least for answering the question, what is fascism? And what that theory is for me, what's most important about that theory is a political philosophy. It's a description or a way of looking at the world rooted in certain political traditions and not rooted in others. And that regardless of whatever discipline you come from, if you are from the broad socialist, anarchist, and communist traditions, you have a better chance of understanding the question of fascism than you would otherwise. So, in terms of audience, my method is really for socialists, communists, and anarchists. It is not for, broadly speaking, liberals, conservatives, progressives. It just doesn't work there. And we'll get into that later. What's important, though, it is the three questions and how they are bound together as one wheel and that in order to move forward, in order for there to be progress, one has to ask and answer all three. The whole has to come into play in order for any one part to be effective, to move. And one part cannot move without the other two. It's three parts, right? All right. So this three-part contraption, I will roll through a variety of political thickets, difficult questions, conundrums, not really paradoxes, but they're, you know, difficult problems that have to be worked out in regards to the question of fascism in the 21st century in 2018. And I think that within these, within the political tradition that I root my political philosophy within, which is this broad socialist, anarchist, and communist tradition, that there's a problem. There's a serious problem, an entrenched problem among certain socialists, anarchists, and communists, by no means all folks within those political traditions. But I would say that the predominant political mainstream of those broad political traditions articulate an understanding of fascism that is deeply flawed. It's fucked up. It's and because it's within my political traditions, it's of most concern. Okay, and that these what I call patrician socialists, they have their own three-wheeled contraption that they wheel through these questions on this political terrain, but they come up with very different answers. So we'll get to that. Secondly, within broadly liberal and progressive circles, there is also a problem with the question of fascism. And in everything I've written over the last few months, these six essays on ghosts of anti-fascism past, if there's an upshot to all of it, it's really this, that, you know, liberals and progressives will fight the most obvious manifestations of neo-fascism in the 21st century. They will. But they misunderstand it fundamentally. They misunderstand its nature. They misunderstand its history. Therefore, their methods of fighting it are screwed up, deeply flawed, double-edged swords, so on and so forth. But at least they're fighting it. Among many patrician socialists, however, you won't even find a recognition that such a political phenomenon exists as neo-fascism. Not as a discrete political phenomenon. Not as a movement relatively independent of capitalist oppression. You won't even find that. So how would you actually mount, you know, an effective attack against it? Well, you won't. You don't. And in fact, the most vicious attacks against Antifa activists, who I would argue, in terms of political philosophy, offer the only articulate resolution of these two problems, one that liberals will fight it, but not effectively because they can't understand it within their own political philosophy, and socialists who won't fight it, but are actually the only political force that can fight it, right? The solution to fascism is socialism, for sure. You can't define fascism without its roots, understanding its roots in history as a phenomenon arrayed against the broad left. This is true, but it's not the whole story. And socialists, radicals of all political stripes, who fail to understand the enduring and really seriously new outbreak of fascism, it's new character in the 21st century. They don't understand that, then they're also, you know, they hamstring, they kneecap the only political solution to neo-fascism in the 21st century. And I'll tell you, it's not big tech. It's not the deep state. It's not more cops. And it's not more democracy, at least not as it's defined, certainly not as it's defined by liberals. It's not a deepening of their notions of democracy. It's none of those things. Let me also say that, you know, much of what I'm saying is of a polemical nature, but, you know, I'm not personalizing this. When I talk about patrician socialists, really I'm talking about the arguments they make, you know, in written form and interviews and so on and so forth. And there are certain representatives who take these political lines, and they're sharp, and they need sharp responses. So this failure of liberals and socialists both to understand neo-fascism and fight it effectively, I think is also rooted really in a failure to theorize a relationship between neo-fascism and capitalism, in 2018. And part of what I'm going to be getting at, a central focus of it is going to be that changes in ideology and culture, social bases of fascism relate to the political economy of capitalism. So one of the ways I will get into this is through an audio essay that I call Gott und Uber, Gott being Game of Thrones, und being the German word for and Uber being, well, the gigantic rideshare corporation. So this sorry-ass state of affairs on the part of sort of the liberal and progressive school of thought can be summarized in something I call the laundry list. And the laundry list is a way of approaching the question of neo-fascism in the 21st century in order to compensate for a lack of focus and power of explanation, in order to compensate for obvious shortfalls, obvious inadequacies of that really are rooted in the political philosophy of liberalism and progressivism, that analysts and activists, media pundits, so on and so forth, they'll do two things. One, they will sort of associate neo-fascism with the Republican Party, with a particular political organization, and then with its most obvious, again, political manifestations, Nazis with swastikas in the streets. And the laundry list is really employed by liberals in order to compensate for this sort of screwed up approach to fascism. And when they employ it, they are really trying to include everything of an extremist or totalitarian nature, and they overreach, thereby explaining nothing. A good example of this tendency is, I think, Umberto Eco's 1995 essay. It was in the New York Review of Books. It was titled Ur-Fascism. And Eco, who's no intellectual slouch, you know, outlines 14 features of the phenomenon he purports to identify and analyze, fascism. And, this approach in the 90s sort of set aside Marxist explanations and sought to really create a hybrid between liberal and Marxist, but largely set aside Marxist explanations of fascism. But it was really still trapped in Cold War political traditions, best exemplified by using the term populism. And this line of thought, this tendency, continues today. In the mid-2000s, another scholar of fascism, Roger Griffin, and some other analysts sought to uphold a consensus on a definition of fascism, largely in response to cockamamie notions put forward by a guy named Jonah Goldberg, who's a right-winger. And Goldberg was arguing that fascism had its roots in liberalism. But I think this consensus is also inadequate for our purposes. All right, so liberals place the danger of fascism outside of capitalist progress, outside of what they call liberal democracy. They identify it as an outlier political phenomenon. Or they'll talk about it in terms of, a recrudescence of ancient grievances, you know, on the part of rural white people left behind, tobacco chewing, this, that, and the other thing. And in this, they misrepresent the character, the nature of 21st century fascism, just as many analysts mischaracterize fascism, classical fascism, what I call classical fascism, as something that was fundamentally anti-modern, and that the forces of modernism and progress needed to be strengthened in order to counteract it, as though that would be sufficient. But it wasn't then, it won't be now. In fact, it is very much a part of progress. It is very much a part of postmodernism, if you will. So liberals, when they do this, when they fail to understand fascism, as they always will, as a part of global capitalist political economy, they're taking an ahistorical, right, approach to the problem. This extremism from within, totalitarianism without, from without, Trump here, Putin there, is deeply cynical. And I think most socialists, anarchists, communists understand this. And when they savage this cynical anti-fascism, this is generally a good thing, right? Should be done. But you need an alternative. You can savage liberal approaches to fighting fascism. But if you do that by arguing that there is no such thing as neo-fascism, not as a significant political force, then that's really dangerous. Liberals fight fascism in ways that are always limited to resistance, never rebellion, much less revolution. You'll hear renewed cries for a popular front, which was a political strategy which has its roots in the 1930s, well after fascism had already conquered much of Europe. Scholars and activists today who call for a popular front usually are using a really bastardized version of this, an ahistorical version. They're really just grasping for anything, and this reflects probably the contradictions between their political philosophy and actually existing philosophy, between the limits of their political philosophy as it relates to fighting fascism. So to speak of someone like Cass Mutt, the writer for The Guardian, Zia, sociologist of fascism, but not really of populism. To speak of Kaplan betraying the left when he argued for a tactical electoral alliance between so-called democratic forces and a a neo-fascist party, the Jobbik Party, in opposition to Orban's Fidesz Party. This is no betrayal. This is really just an extension of his political philosophy. And it shouldn't shock anyone. So, liberal and progressive approaches to fascism are screwed up, right? But the second political tradition that I'm far more concerned with is that found within socialists, within far, left-wing projects. Jacobin Magazine and Blog, New Left Review, The Socialist Register. Lewis Projects' work as the unrepentant Marxist, and others. This is stuff that I read and fairly regularly. And this broad tradition is most adept at critiquing liberal approaches to fascism, to understanding fascism and fighting it. But, time and time again, in the 7 years that I've been reading Jacobin Magazine and Blog, which is the most important example of this trend I can think of, time and time again, the basic editorial line of that magazine and blog is what I've described. And it's very dangerous. The roots of that analysis lie in an article that the founding editor of Jacobin Magazine, Bhaskar Sankara, published in 2011. And this is key to understanding the problem that patrician socialists, it's key to understanding the patrician socialist line on neo-fascism in the 21st century. The article is called 1,000 Platitudes, Liberal Hysteria and the Tea Party. And it was really the most important early article that Sankara wrote when he founded Jacobin. And I'll go into some detail in regards to my problems with that article in a bit. It remains really today the most articulate expression of this political line. And it needs to be really savaged. Yes, I use that word. But there are tensions. The Antifa, most clearly, is an example of the tension on the left between these approaches. What the Antifa may lack in theoretical clarity and theoretical analysis of fascism, it more than makes up for in fighting these assholes. And that needs to be recognized, not least by socialists and others. But there's another contradiction, so check this out. There is, in New Left Review, an article called Borderland by Stathis Kouvelakis, pardon my mispronunciations if I did mispronounce that. He was a member of Syriza, and then the Popular Front split after the failure of, well, the success of Oshi, and then Tsipras's capitulation to the Troika. Kouvelakis in Borderland, which is an article in New Left Review published recently, really lays out through his what I call the political geography of white nationalism that lies at the center of the European Union project. That all of this, these notions of, open borders and the European Union and democratic rights and, the feminist EU and so on and so forth, are so much nonsense and can only really be understood as such when you take a look at it from the Global South, from the perspective of someone like Kouvelakis, right? And I've written about Kouvelakis's description of the EU, the Fortress Europe. And if this is the case, and I think it is, it's really hard to square that article with others written by Wolfgang Strieck, who's a German sociologist who most recently lent his political support to a split within Die Linke, the main left political party, political grouping, coalition, if you will, in Germany. And the split was over immigration, and this article I read, I think it was The Guardian or something, quoted Bertolt Brecht saying, you know, grub first and ethics later. It was despicable. Really, really nasty stuff. But, again, if you read Streeck's take on neo-fascism in the 21st century, it is fucking preposterous. Totally fucking loony, right? And, but it appears within the same journal, right? This, what is really the standard bearer for left theory and practice, at least as far as I'm concerned. And there is an obvious contradiction between these two analyses of really the same political phenomenon. If you read Streeck and you read Kouvelakis, operating from different academic disciplines, but really addressing the same phenomena, they're looking at the same thing, and their perspectives are radically different. And I think that this has something to do with what I'm talking about. And there needs to be a sharpening of this conflict, a sharpening of the debate over this in order to move forward. Consider, for instance, the differences in the Greek fight for Oshi against the Troika compared to Brexit. Brexit, which I would like to remind you, was, you know, about racist anti-immigrant policies in a country that had no appreciable influx of refugees or immigrants. In other words, you had racist anti-immigrant sentiment, if you will, racist anti-immigrant operationalized through voting and through the streets without actually any kind of, you know, large number of refugees entering England at that time or the other UK states. What does that tell us? It tells us that, well, the political geography of white nationalism exists independent of immigration policies, okay? It means that it has an existence independent of capitalist policies. And that needs to be understood.